Welcome to this podcast is making me thirsty, the number one destination for Seinfeld fans. This episode 162. Today's guest is an actress, writer, and producer. You know her from Kyle XY, The Vampire Diaries, Two Guys and a Girl. She was a writer on the originals and legacies. And of course, she played Miss Rhode Island Karen in the season 6 premiere episode of Seinfeld, The Chaperone. Please welcome Marguerite McIntyre. Marguerite, thanks for joining.
Thank you. Hi, guys.
Marguerite, take us back. This was 29 years ago, believe it or not. The season 6 premiere. Really a lot of hype to this episode. The Chaperone, real fun episode. But tell us a little bit, I mean, early in your career, obviously, I'm assuming there was some sort of audition process. Tell us a little bit about how you got the gig as Miss Rhode Island.
Well, first, thank you very much for having me here. And then also, I have not seen the show in a long time. So literally today I was like, I need to watch it because I haven't seen it in so long. And it's so funny. Like, I laugh so hard and I feel like they are also funny. And Michael Kramer is so deeply funny. I like laughed out loud like 3 times. And I was like, I'm so proud of this. I'm so glad I got to do this one classic episode of this classic, classic show. And for me, it was really funny because I had been working in New York I'd started my career in New York. I was doing theater. And I happened to be in San Diego, not for work. And I got a call from my agents in LA who said, can you come up like today? They're trying to cast this thing on Seinfeld. And by then Seinfeld was such a big show. But because I worked in theater and this was 29 years ago, I missed a lot of shows that were on at night. Like I just didn't see nighttime shows. So I was always like, well, I guess I'll catch them when they're on at 11 at night. And that's when I would see stuff. So I had never seen an episode of it, but I knew it was supposed to be great and everybody loved it and all that. So I was like, oh yeah, like, of course I'll come up. So I drove up from San Diego and I met Mark Hirschfeld's casting associate. And I can't remember his name. And he was literally like the nicest man in the world. But before I got there, I had to get the sides, and the sides at that point were like the curled up fax paper. Like it was so like youngins don't have any idea what I'm talking about. And you guys might not, but it literally was like, you could, if you touched it, like the words would come off. It was like this crazy crinkly paper. And I'm reading this scene and I know she's supposed to be like a beauty pageant contestant. And I'm like, I don't get how this is funny. Like, I was like, I don't know what, I know it's a comedy, the show, I'm supposed to be doing something that's like funny. I don't really get how it's funny. So I was like, well, I'm just going to just commit, man. I'm just going to be this lady and see how it goes. So I went in there and I read for his associate and I had no idea like what was going on. Like, I was like, oh, this is terrible. And he was like, okay, what are you doing in 2 hours? Can you stay? Can you like go meet everybody and read for this? And I said, sure. And he said, well, I want to warn you, like Jerry's going to be there. Everybody's going to be there. And I was like, I wouldn't have been able to pick Jerry Seinfeld out. Except, like, I'd only seen him on like magazines. So I was like, oh, I'll be fine. Cause I mean, I'm not. So I go a couple hours later and I am not going to lie, I've auditioned a lot in my lifetime. This was literally the best audition of my life. And not because of me, because of them, because I walked in this room and it was over at CBS Radford, where I'm now currently picketing. It's so wild. I'm like, yeah, back in the day, it was a different world. I went in and there were like 9 guys sitting in there and like a U. And I walked in and Mark Hirschfeld graciously, oh, hello, and is introduced. And everybody was very sweet. And there were all these, by the way, gorgeous women out there in this like waiting area. And I was like, oh, shit. And they had said they'd been seeing, the reason they even called me is that they'd seen a lot of people. They'd seen a lot of actual beauty contestants as well as actresses who had done pageants. And they're just really having trouble finding this role. And I was like, okay. So I went in and I literally sat down. They're like, do you have any questions? And I was like, no. And Mark Hirschfeld says, I'm going to read with you. I'm like, okay. And he says the first line, whatever it is, like, as Miss America, what would be your first, whatever, what would be your, on your first thing on your agenda? And I just said, as Miss America. And they all started, I literally said 3 words and they started laughing. I was like, what just happened? I was like, okay. And my theater person was like, great, a live audience. I know what to do. This is great. And it was literally the, like, everything that it was not even right. Like, it wasn't even that funny. I think there was a bit of desperation for them. They just were trying to find something. And I walked in and happened to be that something. So they just laughed at everything. And by the end, I was like, almost like woozy from it. Like, I stood up and I was like, thank you guys. This is literally the best, like, 4 minutes of my, thank you. This is wonderful. So I left and I was like, this was the greatest. And then I ended up booking it and I was so excited. And then had a great week. And I was around as much as I could be around because they were so good and so smart that I would sit in the audience bits and just be like, I just want to watch these guys do what they do and soak it up. So I tried to like hang around, but just be unobtrusive for that week. Yeah. And it was wonderful.
Wow. That's great. And yeah, wasn't this, I mean, according to the, you know, IMDb and Wiki and, was this your first sitcom? You mentioned that, yeah, you had done. Yeah. And so the, maybe that kind of naivety that you were talking about of just kind of going in and not like getting too crazy that it's Jerry and not knowing the show that well, and, yeah, and just being loose, it probably helped and came across. And I think you're right. You nail it in that scene, especially when you're just like, as Miss America, you know, you're very, it's very over the top, but it's like, it works because that's kind of what the role is supposed to be. Cause that's what Miss America pageants are, right? They're always, yeah, so over the top. So, yeah, it seems like that's kind of the angle you were taking. And it definitely,
yeah, I was just trying to do like what it felt like when I would watch those, cause they always seemed ridiculous, like hilarious and ridiculous to me. God bless all the women who do it. It's all great. But I mean, I was always like a tomboy weirdo nerd girl. So I'd be like, I don't even understand what's going on, where you can like stand there with your boobs all taped and whatever else you got. Like, I heard women had to put like Vaseline on their gums, and I was just like, I don't even know what's going on there. So to me, it always looked like I'm just trying to like skate through this thing. So I was just trying to act like what they seemed like. So it somehow worked. And that was great.
That's great to hear. And especially I feel like you mentioned the 8 or 9 guys in a U, yeah, that could obviously be intimidating, especially back then. But it sounds like they were pretty comforting. And so Jerry was there as well. Was Larry, yeah, David there? Do you remember?
Yeah.
They were, so those guys, they're, yeah, all there laughing their heads
they
off.
They were all there. And that was, and I had come, I mean, I'd been doing a lot of theater. So I'd been done Broadway and off Broadway. So the more people that were in a room to audition, you, like early days for me, it was a little, I got used to sitting across people with a chair and like reading a scene and being essentially acting in a scene with a casting director. I was like, oh, this is how we do it this way. Okay, this is a thing. And I got used to it. But that first like thing out of the gate being like essentially like an audience was great. And they were like, hi, they were very lovely. Like, obviously, honestly, almost every audition room I've ever walked in, all they want you to do is solve the problem. And I know this from the other side of it too. I'm desperate for you to be like everything I want. I'm like, I want to love you and I want you to be great. And so the energy always feels like welcoming, and you just can step into it and try and feed off that good energy. And in that case, it was absolutely wonderful. And again, yeah, my, I think not understanding the humor of the show made me inadvertently do exactly what the show did, which was everything was character-based humor. It wasn't laugh lines. So I just had to approach it like the show approached it, right?
Which, yeah,
is character driven.
It's funny. I'm trying to picture you, you know, 30 years ago, getting that side, as you said, on a show, yeah, you never, number one show in America, you never watched it. You're trying to see why it's funny, but boy, were you funny. And 32 million people watched that episode on, as that kicked, mm-hmm, off season 6. So that was kind of a pivotal season, if you will, in Seinfeld lore. Tom Sharonis, their famous director, left. So this was the first episode with Andy Ackerman. A couple of the old people left, but obviously Larry and Jerry were still there, and it was formidable. And, you know, it was coming off a huge finale, The Opposite. So you might have caught up a little bit on that.
I now know every episode inside and out because it eventually did that thing that I had hoped that it would, which came on at 11 at night.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So not long after that, too, because it started, you know, gets in the back in the day when you get 100 episodes, you start doing syndication. So I started seeing it and became obviously obsessed with it because it is literally the funniest show that's ever been on television. So, I mean, I now know it so well. I just remember, I just think of all the conversations I've ever been in where people like refer to Seinfeld stuff And once you get started talking about, remember the time when Kramer did that, and you end up talking like you all were in college together and these are people mm-hmm. you knew. And that's pretty hard for a show to do. And even when people will meet me and they will be like, wait, you did a Seinfeld? Or they'll actually recognize, they're like, wait. Last night I saw that thing. That was a long time ago. But it is still like the biggest thing in the world. And it's so funny because when I was a young actress, I worked with this guy, the Harvey Evans. He was a very well-known guy on Broadway. He was so wonderful and he passed last year, but I loved him deeply. And he'd done like all the Sondheim shows on Broadway. He'd done a million things. But he only did like one or two TV things. He was in the original West Side Story stage and in the movie. He was in Jim Chimney in Mary Poppins, the original. He was in all these big things, but not TV. But he went to LA and he said he was very excited because a friend of his was one of the producers on Cheers, on Frasier. And he ended up being one of Frasier Crane's low self-esteem group. And he was like, I got to be one of Frasier Crane's low self-esteem group characters. And he was like, it felt like such a big epic thing, even though it was this little moment. And I now completely understand what he was saying, because that's what I feel like about this. I was really lucky. It's just this beautiful little nugget that I got to be part of.
Yeah, that's we love hearing those stories too from that kind of, like you mentioned, it almost like a family at that point. So you mentioned how welcoming the audition was, right? Now you're on set, now you're there. We were talking before, just, you know, me and Chris, you were in six scenes, which is a lot for a guest star, even on Seinfeld, where guest stars usually shine. But I mean, you were in six different scenes. We kind of wanted to kind of walk through some of them and maybe get your take on a few of them, especially kind of your first one. Well, you're at the ball game. Do you remember number one, like, where was that shot? And you know, you must have had to go on location for that. You're there with Julia and Jerry. It must have been, I don't know, a day or so, or how does that work? No audience, I'm assuming. Like,
I think it's on the lot. From what I remember, okay. I think they just built that little piece on the lot.
Oh, okay.
And because I don't remember going anywhere, and I feel like in my head it was on the lot. It wasn't any big shakes. It wasn't like,
oh, interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So, and it was, and I don't think it was more than half a day. I think it was pretty economically shot. I think it was like a thing. And it was fun. It was fun to be outside. It was, right. You know, those guys are amazing, and you know. It was great.
Yeah. Though that's interesting, because I think there were some actual real ball players in that episode. I don't know how many of them you got to interact with, but like Danny Tartle. Okay, yeah. Because I think those were shot in a stadium from what we gathered. So we thought maybe the exterior was also there, but it sounds like no.
I only got to see them on TV.
Yeah, as Yankee fans at the time.
Story.
We were big on that episode because of that. But and then you had a lot of scenes with Michael Richards, especially the one that comes to mind for me is, you know, the poise count, and he's like you mentioned, just he's really going at it with you, yelling, and just, I don't know, those must have been some fun scenes that takes there with Michael Richards as far as Kramer goes, but the, you know, poise count, and he's going nuts on you.
He was so funny, but he was so serious. I just remember, like, again, like, I didn't know any of these guys that first couple of days. So you meet everybody, like a little table read, you do the thing. And of course, Jerry was very, like the nicest. He was the most polite, well-mannered, warmest host at a party. Like, he was a guy who was like, welcome to this experience, blah, blah. He was kind and he was civilized and sweet. But I didn't have a lot of conversations with him really outside the scenes because he was doing his 500 other things that the man was doing on the show. And same with Julia. I only had one, which I'll tell you about, but I only had one real interaction with her because a couple things were, there was the lady who, I'm glad I rewatched it, the lady who played the person that she does the job interview with, and I've forgotten that actress's name, who's very nice.
Gail Strickland.
Yes, Gail. And Gail and she knew each other from the neighbor. They both lived near each other and had all these people in common. So they were like, beep. And Jason Alexander is Mr. Broadway. And so we had shared a really close friend and was like, oh, did my friend David, blah, blah, blah. We were chatting. So we were like, so I didn't actually have, I only had one real interaction with her, but it was a very welcoming, very warm, wonderful set. And actually I only had one real interaction with Larry David, in which he was like, now that I know, like everyone knows Larry David as Larry David, I'm like, oh, okay, this all makes sense, which was, you see my hair. I mean, this is what my hair always looks like. And the show, it's like, which okay. I can make my hair do, but like you do a little torture and hairspray and it's fine. You could do this, which I did for the audition. I walked into the audition and I had some very big, you know, hair. And when we were rehearsing early days, like the first walkthroughs, I mean, I'm wearing, you know, like that. I look like that. I don't look like a beauty contestant. I'm not wearing a bunch of makeup. My hair is flat. He's like, oh no, what have we done? Like, she does not look like this glorious, glamorous girl. So at one point he walks up to me and he's like, what's happened to your hair? And I was like, nothing. He's like, but your hair, like it looked different before. I was like, yeah, you do it. Like I did it. I mean, I didn't do it just to rehearse. I mean, but like, will it go back? Yeah, it'll go back. It's fine, but it'll go, it's going to be like that. He's like, you sure? And I'm just like, yeah, I promise. It'll get big again. It's okay. It was like, I was like, and I didn't even quite know, because I was like, is he joking? I didn't even tell, because he's so wry, you like want to laugh. You're like, I can't tell if I'm like going to insult him if I think this is hilarious, because it seems really funny, but I'm like trying to be respectful, because I'm like, don't fire me because my hair is flat, please. But anyway, I was like, it'll get big again, I promise. It's gonna be really big. And he was like, okay. He walked away. That was literally my only conversation with him ever, which was glorious, of course.
Wow. So yeah, I guess that takes me back to the set. You mentioned Jerry. This is obviously Andy Ackerman's first kind of time doing Seinfeld, directing. I don't know, who was kind of running the show? Did you feel like, it sounds like Jerry was kind of the point person for everything? Or was Ackerman kind of leaned in?
My memory, I won't 100% guarantee that kind of stuff. My set experience was limited at the time, but because it was three camera, I think there was enough theater reference for me that I could kind of get it. I think he was very well respected, Andy, on that set. And he was allowed to direct. I think also you're directing people in their sixth season. So those guys are working a lot of stuff out on their own, which is what I was enjoying, watching them on the set work the bits. And then Andy being, oh yeah, yeah, this, oh yeah, that. And I remember George Shapiro being around a bit as well. And he was lovely. Yeah. And so it felt like a really humming. I've been on first season, like first episodes of directors, first season shows, things getting together. I've been a lot of different now over the years, a lot of different incarnations of how sets work. It was humming. It was wonderful. The vibe was great. They knew they were a huge hit, I'm sure. And everything was great. And Andy Ackerman was lovely. And it was obviously a great episode and he was a great director for it. So it didn't feel like there was some director over there. It felt like he was allowed to do his job and they were respectful of him and he was respectful of them. And it was nice. It was a really pleasant kind of
atmosphere. Yeah, to your point, they were humming. You know, this was season six kicking off. So one of my favorite scenes is obviously you and Jerry going out on the date, right? I mean, right away the scene opens, Kramer's talking to you, voice counts, you got a big waist, da, 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 all these things. Jerry looks so annoyed the whole time. Tell us a little bit about that scene. That must have been, I mean, just Jerry being annoyed, I think, was just brilliant acting from Jerry, who, you know, doesn't have any Broadway chops, but I think he pulled it off.
He was great. I thought he was great throughout the whole series because he never tried to do anything that felt wrong to him, and so was always amazing. In that scene, as I now remember, having watched it finally again, he was sitting next to me, so it was really about me interacting with Michael Richards, with Kramer. And I felt like, because I'm remembering that, because he became her Svengali, essentially, like as soon as he starts talking, she's not worried about Jerry. Right. So I didn't really look at him in the scene. I'm just like leaning farther and farther into Kramer. Tell me more. You know so much about this. Like, yeah, man, like help me win the pageant. So it's literally like poor Jerry. Of course, he would have seemed annoyed because she quits even paying attention to him on this ridiculous date. So I do remember, this is one thing about Michael Richards, I will say too, he was also really like lovely, but not like loose actor guy. Like Jason Alexander was like, hey, let's, oh, you did a show, we know people, whatever. Michael Richards was like, hello. It was very like, hello, we're working on these scenes. He would rehearse and rehearse. He did make me laugh a lot, not because he was fooling around, but because he wasn't. Like, he did that fall when he walks out to see what's out on the, the balcony. And he slipped in the water. He did that fall like 80 times, like every rehearsal, and he practiced how the fall should look. And every way that he did it was hilarious. So for me, the hardest time not to laugh was the fall, because it was deeply hilarious. And also when he's yelling in my face, poise counts. I was just like, it was good that it was almost violent, because it was the only way to hold it together. Because and not because he was trying to make me laugh, it's because he was so good as Kramer, and I just wanted to pee my pants. I mean, it was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean that so the funny. Fall of the balcony, like you said,
that fall.
Yeah,
the slip on the fully, and you don't expect it, and it's such a clever thing. It wasn't. I don't believe it was in the script. He just did it the first time. Like, of course, there's going to be water here, and then everything fell out, and was like, okay, well, now that's hilarious, you know. So good.
I mean, like we mentioned, this was your early on television career, right? And so we know you went on to you know, producer, from that side of things, and you kind of touched on it earlier, but I'd love to hear a little more about that, from, like, you know, you'd be watching guys like Larry and Jerry run the show at Seinfeld, and then moving on to being in that position yourself and auditioning people. I mean, What did you take, you know, just from them, just from kind of, you know, all of your real experience, I guess, but we, you know, we like to hear about, you know, what maybe you've learned from their set and maybe you've taken to sets you've worked on afterwards.
Well, I just want to say one more thing before I get to that, which is,
of course, yeah,
I had one moment with, you know, the goddess, Miss Julia Louis-Dreyfus, like, who I just have to say, it was literally also one of the best moments of my life being on set, which was, we had not really spoken, because again, we didn't have scenes together. She was always with this other friend of hers, and then busy because they're doing a lot of stuff there. And when we had to do, I didn't know when I auditioned for it that I had to sing this song badly. That wasn't part of the sides. Now, I've been in Broadway musicals. I'm a singer. So when I saw this, I was like, oh, okay. And I had to work with that week, they sent me to a guy to have me learn the song. And he was like, oh, great. The one person who can sing now, we're going to get you on here and you can't sing. And I was like, that's okay. That's okay. I think I always hate when people have to act like they can't sing, because they do this thing where they're off pitch and they're also off tempo. And people usually have one or the other. Very few people have neither, right? So it's like, let's just keep her on tempo and just sing anything but the note. And we tried that, and he started laughing. He's like, okay, that's what we'll do. But no one had heard it until the day of that Friday. Like, the first time anybody heard what that song was going to be was the day we're all in curlers. We're about to, like, the audience is going to be coming in 10 minutes. So I go over, I have to stand in the corner by the Merv Griffin-y, like, Miss America set, the little, you know, the stuff behind the little silver buttons. And I have, like, curlers in my hair, and they play the music, and they're like, oh, and a little crowd forms, because they're like, well, what's this bit going to be? And it's part, you know, it's partly like crew and everybody else. And as the music comes, she starts walking up and comes and stands at the edge of this thing. And I'm like, comedy goddess at, you know, 10 o'clock. So I start doing this thing. I start singing it. People start laughing. Her face is completely neutral, completely, not like, not anything, just like completely like watching, assessing. I finish it. People go, oh my God, they clap. And I'm like, oh, thank God. It's funny. These guys think it's funny. And then they break apart, and she walks over to me. This is like literally the best one. She goes, that was really funny. Like that. And I went,
wow.
That, I go, that means so much to me coming from you. I can't know. That was really funny. And then she turned around and walked away, never cracked a smile. And I was like, this is literally the best moment of my whole life. And obviously, I'm such a huge fan of hers. Veep was like the most glorious. I was like, this woman is, I mean, all of her shows, everything she's done, she's amazing. And to me, that's also a little thing. I'm like, I got a compliment, a comedy compliment from Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I'm like, I'm dead. I'm done. I don't need to do anything else. That's great.
From So amazing. Good. From It's the Most Unusual, that, right? Can you sing that still?
It's the... I mean, sure, it's the most unusual day. Feel like, what? It's like all that, like, trying to find the note. Just, I just felt for her terror. I just felt like this poor woman. It was a terrible, terrible moment for little Karen. This
was, it's funny you mention that. So was the script set that way? Like, the doves are going to die. I know you talked about you're going to have a magic act. I was just wondering if there was anything that change during the week, or
The only thing that changed for me, actually, there were no changes. That script was like gorgeous. The only thing they changed was the song, and this is kind of weird because of my history, was supposed to be "The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow." It was supposed to be "Tomorrow" from Annie, and the biggest, most fancy show in all the world said, "Too expensive. It's stupid. We're not going to spend that kind of money on that song." Wow. But I had worked with Martin Charnin and those guys. I had done this show, the sequel to Annie, Annie Warbucks in New York. And I had this whole thing and I was like, oh my God, Martin Charnin, blah, blah. And then they're like, no, we're not doing that song. And I was like, oh, but it was very funny. The idea of the most optimistic song in the world as her life is going up in flames was very funny, but they were like, no. And it ended up being great. I mean, it's like, the show was great. That song worked great. So it was all fine, but it was very funny. I was like, oh, too bad. I'd like to sing that song and have Martin Charnin want to kill me later. But yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, it's great to hear that, like, you had to learn to not sing well, and then you made the decision of like, okay, how am I going to do this? There's a couple ways to do it. It definitely plays well, and it's great too, because they bring it back to the closing credits too. I mean, the whole song, you get a lot of time on that with the whole song kind of playing out.
The worst song in the world. And then the other thing is so funny, my dad back in the day, he was like, he knew that the night the episode aired, he was like, wait, she's going to sing? She didn't tell me she was going to sing. You guys, he's with friends. She's a really good singer. She's been in New York. She's been doing the cast albums. And I didn't warn him. And so when the thing, she sings like that, he's like, that's not how she sings, you guys. She doesn't sing like that. She sings better than that. So I kind of embarrassed my poor father by not having told him in advance, Dad, you know, it's bad singing. It's not like that.
Well, I'm sure he was super proud, obviously. Phenomenal job on that episode. So, well, speaking of your dad, you grew up in Detroit, is that right?
I was born in Detroit, grew up in Michigan, and then in Arizona. Went to the last couple years of high school, and then went to school I went to USC, then I went to RADA in London, and then I moved to New York and, of course, waited tables, because that's what you do.
Oh, wow.
A lot of education, and then finally started working in theater. And then randomly, I didn't quite mean to move to LA, just stuff kind of brought me here. And then I kept going back and forth, and then that was just hard and expensive and annoying. And I eventually was like, okay, I've got to get it figured out. So it wasn't actually until 2001 I finally moved properly to LA. So I've been here since then.
Wow. Well, fun fact, Brenda Strong, friend of the show, was Miss Arizona in real life in Arizona.
She's so gorgeous. My goodness. I don't know her, but she seems amazing.
She's
a lot of cool, iconic stuff. So
incredible. So you obviously you're doing a lot of theater, and just going back, like, all of a sudden Seinfeld's now did you want to get into the sitcom world? Was that something you asked your agent about?
Here's the thing, and I know I totally skipped your big question about how that I promise you I'll get back to it, but I will just say, as an actor then, I loved doing three camera, because it was like theater and it was fun. And I love a certain kind of a comedy. Good comedy is just wonderful to do. It's so satisfying. It's fun. It's like, it's a little dance. It's timing. It's all that stuff. And, you know, it's just not easy to get all those big jobs. So I tried. And I'm one of those actors who did a million pilots. I did the stuff. I tried. And I always did well enough, and I'm very grateful. And I like stayed working, and I'm like, that's a win. I'll take that win. But yes, I would have loved to have done like a proper run at some three camera comedy back in the day of the that was when it was really in its heyday. Some great stuff was happening. But I also, you know, was working, got a lot of like drama stuff going. And then once you're kind of in that you can still bounce around, which I did. I mean, same thing with writing. I bounced around in genre and comedy and drama and all that. So thankfully, because that's the way to kind of keep rolling and having fun and, you know, staying kind of sharper. But I would have loved to have done one of those shows, but I didn't, I never quite got one of those. It was one of them. So, you know, I loved all the time I got to spend on any of those sets though. And it was also a great lifestyle. I mean, you just really had a life. You could really have a life. Those were those 5-day weeks, a couple of real short days in those 5-day weeks, and only one or two long days in those weeks. So it was a good lifestyle for people. So yeah, I would have dug it hard, but alas.
Yeah, we hear that often from a lot of the actors we've talked to, is that schedule helps a lot, right? And then just kind of getting into that groove, yeah. It seems to be. And then you have the live audience, like you mentioned, which probably
is really fun. Like, yeah, it's like theater. Fun and joy. I mean, I love all of it. I mean, getting a big, meaty, dramatic scene is awesome. It's really good. And I like doing all that too. But, you know, especially these days, make me laugh. It's very nice. I like a comedy.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tony. Go ahead. So speaking of that, and you mentioned you never watched the show, and then you told us you went back, you watched them, you loved it, etc. But I wonder if you did watch the show, if that would have changed things. Like, would you have gone into that audition differently, knowing how you think a Kramer would want to react, etc.? I just wonder about that.
No, I actually don't know because like I said, I think I inadvertently made it character driven. And I think watching it, you would have known that the humor is character driven because it's not about, because sometimes I've done, I mean, there are a lot of 3-camera stuff back in the day that was really like, you got to land a joke. And sometimes that joke was not funny. So you had to find a way to be like, something about the way you do that joke is funny. Something about your timing or the way you subvert expectation with your timing, even if the joke isn't funny, there's something about the way you did it that was funny. There's a lot of kind of working things out to try and make stuff work. I hope I would have recognized that it was just character driven and done something similar. And that really was, she really, I watched her dance. She really was what I felt like I thought Miss America contestants seemed like to me. I mean, it's not like what they were. Obviously, they were much more realized than Miss Karen, but like that's what they felt like to me. So I think I might have been not far off that. But yeah, I might well have been blessed by not having seen it and not blowing my shot by being influenced by what I had seen.
Yeah, well, you hit it out of the park for sure. And this is kind of a sneaky memorable episode, right? Like, yeah. The cotton uniform stuff, obviously your stuff, the introduction to Mr. Pitt, you know.
Mr. Pitt, I know. And the
sound. Did you get to meet him?
I did. He was lovely. He was super lovely. And then I met him again another time later, just socially. And he was just so lovely. And I forgot about Mr. Pitt until I saw it again today. And I was like, oh my God, Mr. Pitt, and the socks. And like, I love so much. Hi, Mr. Pitt, is Elaine there? Jerry calls. It's so deeply funny. They're just really like all these little nuggets of just like, a laugh just comes out of you. Like you can't, they're so funny in this show. When she's like, I can't go. And you just, it's just funny. It's like so funny. It's a very funny episode. I really enjoyed watching it again today.
Now we know you're a good fan because you picked up on that. Hello, Mr. Yeah. Pitt.
Oh my God, I loved it. It was perfect.
That's a great one. I mean, that's what the show was, right? It was, yeah. They were basically in perpetual adolescence, is how I like to say it. They're, you know, they're just two kids calling up like a kid would call up a house with a dad.
Exactly. Exactly. And then she's like, her little face, she's like, I can't go. She does her, it's great.
Yeah. And you picked up on that too, because that's how you played that character. Like you mentioned, when you're at dinner and Kramer starts talking, like you're done with Jerry and you just zero it in like, oh really, what else, like that's, and you got the focused eyes and you played that so well. And just yeah, and then the whole doves thing, and it's just a great episode.
It's so funny. I mean, what's your talent, magic? Come on. That's really funny. Like, what, Miss America? And the other really funny line, which I forgot, which hey, so it's Kramer. I'm going out with one of the Miss America contestants. You want to come? He's like, which state?
That's his first question.
State. And it's just hilarious. They're never in contention. Like, no.
He's right. I looked it up. They still haven't won one, Marguerite.
I think back in the day I looked too. I was like, oh, that's really sad. But yeah.
Yeah, well, I forgot the other line I liked. You were like, you know, you're so serious in the limo. You're like, Kramer, would you be my personal, consultant? Like, yeah. You just met the guy, for crying out loud. Like,
I mean, she's not. Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Like, you're like, God bless her. But she is somebody who is, you know, she needs a Svengali. So, of course, she's not going to seem like there's a whole lot going on. If you're going to meet Kramer, have him be your Svengali. Your magic, your talent is magic. Like, come on, man. So I felt like she was like a little bit of a, I really just hope it's all going to work out. Like, this was, you know, poor Karen Hansen. I just felt like she went back to Rhode Island and sort of said, you know, that's it for beauty pageants for me. I think she probably met a nice fella and.
Yeah, we were talking earlier. It was a shame you weren't invited for the finale, because I mean, you're one of the people whose lives got
crushed.
Like, totally
her dream.
Yeah,
that finale was great. I mean, they probably could have like done so many.
Yeah, there was a long list. Yeah,
it's a long list, but they did. Yeah. I mean, her dreams were definitely crushed by carelessness with that.
Jerry gives the yell. He curses in the limo with Kramer. That's always a classic too. Whenever they do that,
funny, right?
On a sitcom, you know.
Shut the fuck up. Exactly. Like, it was hilarious.
So, what are you up to these days? I know you mentioned picketing, but outside of that, any projects you're writing, producing? Tell us a little bit about where we can see you next.
Well, I so yes, we are striking, sadly, but hopefully that will get resolved in the next probably 2-3 months. We'll see what's then. I think I imagine there will be an explosion of new wonderful stuff like there was the last time. So that's good. So yeah, since I was still acting up until Vampire Diaries, and I did 6 seasons acting on that. And then during that time I'd been writing. I always kind of had it like I always was writing. I did like wrote a couple little plays here and there. Done in New York and here. And then when I came to LA, like so many of my friends were writers and they were really, really supportive and like, come on, like let's have you do this. And I was like, I don't know if I can write TV. I don't think I understand it. And then I was doing it more and more. And of course I understood it more and then got some chances and said, all right, why don't I do this? And sold a pilot and started writing for TV. And so I've ended up, that's kind of what I've been doing is writing and producing for now, like 10 years. I think the last, I did do a one day on Little Fires Everywhere because my dear friend Liz Tigelar, who's the showrunner of that, wanted everybody, she's amazing, and she wanted everybody that she knew to be in it in some way. So she was like, will you come and do it? She was like one line or two lines, like a half a page. I was like, I'll do anything. So it was really fun. I hadn't been acting on a set in a super long time. So I went to set, whatever it was, like a year and a half ago for like one day. And I was like, this is so relaxing to just go be an actor on set. You can just like focus on one thing because being a writer producer is wonderful. It's super fulfilling. It's a great job. It's just also a huge job and you feel like your brain, you just don't have any space in your brain left for much else. So, but I've been doing that for a long time. And most recently, like I know on Netflix, From Scratch is a thing that I wrote on. It's like, it was a beautiful show.
Oh yeah.
Then a genre show I did called Vampire Academy is on Peacock. And then those are the two things that are on now. I mean, going back, you could see Casual, which was a really great Hulu show, which I was really proud of. Obviously did originals and did legacies and did, I don't even know what else. I think everything is still always available all the time now. So you're like, what's out? You're like, well, I think kind of everything, but yeah. And then now I'm just, the timing was kind of, everything was kind of a little bit on hold because we didn't know if there'd be a strike. So I have a couple of things that I'm super, super excited about in development that I hope we can just everybody like send a little like hope into the universe that something might happen with that are kind of super fun. And then that'll be that when we come out of it. So, but it's been the one thing I will say about the strike is seeing all these writers, and I'm sure all the you know, these Seinfeld writers are, everybody's out there and, great support. And it's really so much solidarity, but also like so fun to see all these people. So weirdly, it's really social and really, really fun. So that part of it has been just really like, not terrible. I'm not going to lie. It was like, I'm sure I'll get hotter and more, you know, tired of it as everybody will as we go on, but it's been very positive. It's been very good energy.
That's great. We know it's a close-knit community, so glad. Hopefully, hope. That's all we can ask. And we were hopeful that you got that call in San Diego some 29 years ago. So there's only one Miss Rhode Island, and it's you, Marguerite. So can't thank you enough for spending some time with us tonight. And, you know, you will forever live in Seinfeld lore as Miss Rhode Island.
Thank you. And thank you so much for asking me, you guys. You've been patient because it took me a minute, but I'm so excited and I'm going to go back and listen to all of your podcasts too. And just like I did with Seinfeld, I'll probably be like, oh my God, why am I listening to this? So I'm really excited. So thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much.
So much.
So much fun.
Okay. Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye.